Here today in Zion. It's great to be home. My name is Andrew Eckert. I grew up going to this church. I think most of you know me, but I'm still getting to know quite a few of you. It's great to see how the church has been growing or changing over the years. But it's my privilege to worship with you this morning and now share a bit of a message. For the past 13 years or so, this church has actually sent my family and I out as missionaries to the Himalayas. And it's been an incredible time, and there's been incredible fruit. And so this morning, what I want to share with you is a bit of an encouraging message. I want to share with you some stories about how we're still seeing God at work in the world, and especially in the Himalayas where we've been. I think as we watch the news these days, it's just so much negativity and so much terrible this is happening and terrible that is happening, and there's so much attacks on our faith happening, that it's very easy for us as Christians to be discouraged and think God's kingdom is going backwards. But the reality is, it's actually advancing, and it's actually growing. And today, I want to share with you a few stories about that, so hopefully you'll leave encouraged and excited about what God is doing in the world and about how you can be a part of it. We've spent all these years working with an organization called Operation Mobilization. And Operation Mobilization, or OM, as we're commonly known, we're all about planting churches now. See, for decades, we went around the world evangelizing and distributing literature, and people were coming to faith, but then what happened to them? We don't know. And for me, and for most of us in ministry, our home church growing up was really important for making us who we are, for helping us decide to really follow Jesus. I know that was critical for me. I grew up in a Christian family, but still coming to church here every week, going to the youth group, having peers who are also following Jesus here in this building was absolutely crucial for me to decide to actually follow my parents' faith and make it my own. It was with the youth group at a missions fest in Edmonton that I actually felt the call to go into ministry, to go to Nepal specifically. So for me, this church has been very important. And we think all over the world, people need not only to hear the gospel once, but they need a fellowship. They need a church in their community that they can be a part of, where they can learn and grow and see the gospel lived out in their own contexts. So at OM in the Himalayas, we really emphasize this church planting. And we do it by mobilizing local Nepali Christians to go out into the least reached areas of their own country. Now, we also get to go trekking door to door in the hills doing evangelism, but it's those locals that really are the most amazing missionaries. Last year in 2023, we had about 200 young local missionaries working with OM. And with them, we visited about 300,000 households in remote areas. And that's amazing, isn't it? 300,000 households received the gospel. You don't hear that in the news, do you? But what's really cool is actually all of you here at Zion, you were a big part of that number. You were a big part of OM Nepal's success because you sent us and we were there and we were a part of it. And you've been praying and you've been giving to that work as well. So thank you so much for that. Thank you so much for the part that you've played in building God's kingdom in the Himalayas. Now, over the years, you've probably seen some of our newsletters or you've seen on the Discovery Channel that the Himalayas is a really beautiful part of the world. I'll never forget a trip I took just last summer, actually, with a friend of mine in the Himalayas. We were going out. We were going to go door to door, giving away gospel material. And our trip started early in the morning in Kathmandu, where we were living. I got up, and it was just starting to get a little bit light, but it's a big, smoggy city. And we got up. We started making our way through the narrow alleys to the bus park, and there were garbage fires, and there were street dogs, and there were street cows. But we made our way through these narrow ways and eventually came to the bus park. And it's this big, smoky din of activity filled with these old buses that are belching black smoke and people selling things and people cramming goats into buses and chickens onto the roof. It's quite a rodeo. But we made our way through all this, and we eventually found our bus. It was a little old bus, probably designed to seat 20 people, but somehow they fit about 40 of us in there, as well as the goats and the chickens and the sacks of potatoes. And with a rumble, we were off. And at first, we were going through these Kathmandu streets and then up the side of the mountain. And then we cleared the smog, and we got to the very top of the hills that are around the Kathmandu Valley. And then for a split second, we had this beautiful view. And it's just a sea of green mountains covered with jungles and rice fields. And off in the distance, there'd be the snow-capped Himalayas. But then the climb was over, and down the other side we went. And we rode that bus for about 12 hours through the hills, up the mountains and down the mountains. And I was with this new guy, and I was supposed to be teaching him all about how to go out and do evangelism, how to go out and share the gospel, and how to ride these buses. And well, we had such a good time, I completely missed our bus stop. And we ended up spending the night in a completely random village that we weren't planning to go to, but in missions we say there's no mistakes, there's just happy accidents. So we stayed there, we spent the night, and then back we went the next day, about 3 hours back from whence we came. And this time I was a little more careful to say, where do we get off? Where do we get off? And so I was surprised when the driver said, this is your stop. And he let us out, and we were in the middle of a jungle. There was nothing to be seen. There was just trees. And I thought, well, what on earth do we do now? And I was kind of worried, but my friend was there. And he said, so where do we go now? And I said, well, just wait, slow down. We got to pray first. And we prayed, Lord, help us have a great trip. And sure enough, all of a sudden, this old lady came down the road. She's a very old lady, and she was carrying a huge bundle of grass on her back going about this fast. And I said to her, oh, excuse me, we're looking for this village. Which way is it? And she said, oh, way up there. And she pointed to a little trail going up into the jungle. And so up and up we went. And I mentioned it was summer, so it was a bit of the rainy season going on. And see, here in Canada, we have leeches in lakes. But in the Himalayas, they live in the grass. So as we went up through the jungle, all of a sudden we looked down and our pants were all bloody because leeches were biting us. So that was part two of the adventure for this guy. Leeches are in the grass here. But we stopped and we picked them off and we kept going. We were a little more careful. And eventually we came up out of the jungle, and there in front of us was this big green mountainside. And it was all terraced from hundreds of years of each generation adding another cut in the mountain where they could make a little flat spot to grow some rice. And so there are all these green terraced rice fields all over the mountainside, and here and there in the rice field there were houses, little mud-plastered houses with stone slate roofs. And outside of each house there's a banana tree and a water buffalo tied up that they would milk. And in this village, what I'd wanted to do is I wanted to meet a pastor that lived there. We were going to meet with him first and then carry on to another place. And I was thinking, this is a huge village. It would take 2 days to walk to every house. I wonder where the pastor's house is. And we were looking and looking. And then we saw way up high in one place, there was a house that had a great big white cross painted on it. I thought, oh, that must be it. Let's go. We made our way there. And sure enough, there he was. And he was happy to see us. They gave us cucumbers, and his little old wife ran out and quickly milked the buffalo and gave us hot, fresh buffalo milk straight from the buffalo. It was pretty good once you picked the hairs out. But we talked with him and we spent the night with him, and then we shared that we wanted to go a little higher up the mountains to a Buddhist village where we knew there was no church. And he said, oh yeah, I've been there. We've tried to share the gospel there, but they're very hostile. Like, they threw rocks at us. They said if we come back, they'll beat us with sticks. I don't think you should go there. And I said, well, you know, we're foreigners. We'll go in as tourists. Surely they'll accept us. And he's like, yeah, maybe. I feel like I should go with you. And I said, no, you probably shouldn't, actually, if they know you. And my friend was sitting there, and he's saying, what's he saying? And I said, oh, he's just so grateful that we're going to help share the gospel up there. I didn't tell him a word of that. And so up we went. And we had little audio players like this that had gospel songs and some of the gospels in the local language up there. And we had little books, again, that share gospel stories in the local language. And we made our way up and up and the mountain. And then right at the crest of this mountain, there was this little village. And then down the sides a little bit here and there in the forest, there were more houses. But in the middle of this village, there was this huge white dome, and it was a Buddhist temple. On the top of it was a big gold-colored idol, and there were lots of prayer flags all over the place. And so we started going from door to door. And we'd walk up and I'd say, hello, how are you? And they'd be, oh, you can speak our language. And I'd say, yes, I've lived here a long time. We're just hiking. What a beautiful village you have. And they'd say, oh, thank you so much. And I'd say, oh, but I see you must be Buddhist. What does that mean for you? What do you do? And then they'd share a little bit about what they believe and what they're doing. And then I'd say, oh, that's very interesting. I love learning about your culture, but I also love sharing about my culture and what I believe. I'm a follower of Jesus. Would you like a book about Jesus? It's in your language. And you know, almost everybody said yes. Almost everybody. Over 100 houses we went to over the next few days. There was one or two that were a little bit standoffish. One guy was kind of aggressive, but 100 houses took a book. And it was amazing. Some of them we'd walk up and they were in the middle of doing some little worship thing. And still, they were just so amazed that somebody speaking their language showed up with a book in their language. It was a real joy to be there. What was really amazing too, though, is the whole village quickly heard that there's a couple of Christians here giving away Bibles, but still everybody was so hospitable to us. We stayed with somebody in their home. Most people would also invite us in for more buffalo milk. I got pretty sick of that quick. and they had cucumbers in season. Like, they were generous with us. They were so hospitable. So whatever you see on TV, the Himalayas are beautiful, but it's the people who make it truly beautiful. Nobody came to faith on that trip. Very rarely when I'm sharing the gospel does somebody immediately say, oh, I want to follow Jesus. Because usually when they see a foreigner, they know that I can't actually answer their deepest questions. They know I don't really understand the problems that they'll face if they decide to change their faith. That's what's really amazing about the local missionaries. So one young woman in another nearby village, she received a gospel packet from a team of local missionaries that same year. And she read it, and she was like, I believe this. She was captivated by Jesus. And then when those same locals came around again to do a follow-up, they were able to answer all of her questions. Like she would say, well, what will my family do? And then they could share, oh, this is how my family reacted, and it was very hard, but I came through it, and following Jesus is worth it. And after a conversation, this young woman named Deepika, she believed. She believed in Jesus. And you know what's really amazing is slowly in the next few months, her family saw a change in her, and they all believed in Jesus too. And a whole family was saved. I wasn't directly a part of that, but it's really neat that we get to participate in that, isn't it? To be a part of a team that's doing that. In 2023 alone, about 750 people came to faith through the work of those local missionaries in OM Nepal. Isn't that exciting? 750 new believers. And like I said earlier, we know that I don't want to say it's not good enough, but there's so much more than just an individual or just a family coming to faith. What we really want to see is that these communities have a church, that they have a place where they're gathering with other families and more people, just like we have here. And that's how they'll really grow in their faith. We met a guy named Udaya last year, and he'd been praying for years and years that a church would start in his village. He was the only believer in his village, and he had to walk for hours to go to the next village in order to fellowship every Saturday when they go to church. And he'd been praying that a church would start in his village because he said, oh, nobody wants to come to church with me. I invite them, but they say, oh, it's too far away. But we invited him to a training about church planting. And as he was sitting there, he thought, maybe I can start a church in my village. What is a church? It's where people gather together. We study God's word. We pray. We worship. We can do that in my house. I'll invite my friends to my house. And he went back to his village after the training and started inviting friends to study the Bible together in his home. And sure enough, slowly, slowly, a few of them came to faith. And he realized, I have a church in my home. I have a church in my village. God has answered my prayers. And today there's about 20 believers gathering in his home where he's leading them. And just like that, a church is born. In 2023, there were about 115 new fellowships formed through the OM ministries that we know of. 115. And those were all in villages that previously had no church. So praise the Lord, isn't that exciting? 115 villages that didn't have what we have today because God is at work in the world. And we got to be a part of it. But you know, it is exciting, but the reality is that there are a lot of hard things going on in the world today. There are a lot of challenges that the church is facing here and everywhere. In Nepal, it's very easy to share the gospel, believe it or not. People are very spiritual. It's easy to have a spiritual conversation. I know that's much more difficult here, but easy to talk, but then we also see they have a very great spiritual need. When we were in that Buddhist village giving away those gospels, one of the mornings, my friend and I were having a Bible study, and we had a view of that Buddhist temple. It was early, early in the morning. We were studying the Bible, and this another old woman came up through the jungle from her home. And so she was a Buddhist lady, and so she was walking very slowly, and she had a big string of prayer beads. And she was flicking her prayer beads and saying her same chant over and over again, just seven little sounds. And as she went around and around that temple, she came up and she started circling it. And all morning long, she was circling it, just at her slow, slow walk. And she was running her hands over the idols, saying her chants. And then we were just sitting there watching her and just trying to think about, like, what could we do? How can we speak to her? And then when she'd walked around a few times, she came to the front of the thing, and that's where the idol of the Buddha was. And then she'd get down with great difficulty and lay flat on the ground before this thing, like right on her face. And then she'd stand up again, and then she'd bow down right again. And she did that as many times as she could, and then off she went again, spinning her beads. You see, Buddhists essentially believe that life is a curse. They believe that they've been cursed to have to live a life of pain and suffering. But not only that, but when they die, they'll get reincarnated to live a painful life all over again. So they think they're trapped in this eternal cycle of having to live again and again and suffer again and again. And what they want is to stop existing. So that old woman, as she was going around saying those chants, her goal was, maybe I can be good enough. Maybe I can do enough good religious works. Maybe I can earn enough karma to not have to be born again and exist again, because this was so terrible. So then we come along and we say, oh, if you follow Jesus, you can be born again. And they say, oh, no, thank you. We've been working very hard to never have to be born again. Or we say, when you follow Jesus, you get eternal life. They say, oh, that would be terrible. It's just a totally different way of viewing the world, and it's so hard to speak into it. But we see the pain, and we want to so desperately share with these people. I went down the mountain from there after we'd been in that village for some time, and I came to a Hindu guy's house, and he was also very talkative. And I said to him, okay, really, just tell me the basics. Like, what do you think happens after we die? And he said, well, we Hindus, we believe that all of us live 80 million times. I said, okay. He said, yeah, you live 80 million times as every kind of plant and animal. And then one time you get to be a person. And you live as a person. And after the person dies, you go to hell for some time for the bad things you did. And then you go to heaven for some time for the good things you did. And then it starts all over again. I said, gosh, that sounds exhausting. Is there any way you could just stay in heaven forever? He said, oh, I suppose, but you'd have to live a perfect life. And I said, oh, let me tell you something. I know somebody that did. It was great sharing with him. People were pretty friendly to us all the time because we were foreigners. They saw us and they welcomed us in. But sometimes they're not very nice to those local missionaries. Sometimes they're not nice to us too. But especially over the past year, we've seen a lot of increase in persecution. One young guy, his name was Daniel, and he was leading a team of local missionaries going door to door just like we do. And he made some people angry, and they said, oh, you get out of here with your Christian stuff. We are Hindu. We don't want you here. And he said, okay, we'll leave. But, you know, a mob formed, and eventually there's about 300 people there. And things just escalated, and they grabbed Daniel and these two other guys. They ripped up their clothes. They put them in some Hindu robes. They beat them. They burned all the books that they had to give away. And they said to them, you need to say these Hindu chants or we're going to cut off your heads. But luckily, the police came just in time and arrested them. They didn't arrest the attackers, they arrested our friends for causing trouble. They dragged him to the police station, and they had to sit there for a few days until some local pastors were able to get them out. But they brought those guys back to Kathmandu, and we were talking to them and saying, like, are you okay? Oh my goodness, this is so terrible. Like, how can we support you now? And they said, well, we could use some new clothes. And his phone got wrecked. And we're like, okay, no problem. What else do you need? And they said, well, they burned all our books. We're going to need more books. I'm like, what do you mean you need more books? They said, well, we didn't finish distributing in that area. We got to go finish that up. I was like, what do you mean? You just got grabbed by a mob and threatened with death. Why are you going to go back there? Like, we can send you somewhere else. And they said, no, we got to go back there because we understand those guys. We used to be just like them. I thought, wow, that's pretty amazing. What do you mean used to be just like them? They said, well, when we were Hindus, we also hated Christianity. We didn't like the way it was changing our country, but now we know Jesus. And we understand why they're angry, but they need to hear this too. And we're like, okay, anything else we can give you? And they said, how about a video projector so we can show the Jesus movie at night? Sure, done. And off they went to do it again. And we've actually had about 4 similar incidents this year alone. But almost every time, those young locals, they're just ready to go back out there again. See, they understand something that I think we can all learn. And that's what we see in Ephesians chapter 6. It says, our struggle is not against flesh and blood, but against the rulers, against the authorities, against the powers of this dark world, and against the spiritual forces of evil in the heavenly realms. See, Daniel and his friend, they really understood that those Hindu people, those Buddhist people, are not some sort of enemy. Even when they were getting beat up, they understood, these guys are not the enemy. They're the objective of the love of God. We have a different enemy, but these people are who we want to reach. They're who we want to save. I think we can learn a lot from that, can't we? Yeah, here in Canada, quite often we feel the same way, that people are our enemy. But you know, I'm inspired by those guys, that we need to pray for those people that seem like our enemies. Our objective is people. Now, I met another guy. Like, I keep thinking, how on earth do we do this here? Like, God is at work in the Himalayas, but what about here? What can you do? What can we actually do? We've been giving money to missions, and that's awesome. We should keep doing it. We should keep praying for missions. But what can we do here? I heard a great story. I met another guy in Nepal recently, and I was introduced to him because I had this friend named Man Kumar. Now, many of you heard about our Shiloh Farms ministry. We had this awesome little organic vegetable farm. It's still going in Nepal. It's how we got our visas. We had a great training program called the Farming God's Way training program. And I spent quite a few years training this young man named Man Kumar. And he was leading everything. He was doing an awesome job. And then he came to me one day about 2 years ago and he said, Andrew, I'm really sorry. I feel like God is leading me to go be a church planter in this other region of Nepal. And he was kind of my hope of a succession plan, but it's like, how can you be mad at somebody for wanting to be a church planter? And I said, okay, you go. That's great. That's awesome. So then fast forward 1 year, I met up with him again last year. And he'd been out doing this for about 1 year. And he said, yes, so far this year in my area, we have planted 23 churches. And I looked at him and said, I don't believe you. How have you planted 23 churches in 1 year? You know, in Canada, we don't share the gospel with 23 people in 1 year. How do you plant a church? 23 churches in a year. And he said, well, I went around to all the churches that were already there. And I told them that they have to share the gospel and they have to go plant churches. And anyone that was interested, I did trainings for them. And they are the ones who actually planted the churches. I said, okay, that makes good sense. But 23, that's a lot. Like, do you have any stories? He said, oh, let me introduce you to somebody. And right there at our training center, there was this other man there. And Monkumar called him over. And I could tell this man actually, he'd recently had an amputation of his right arm. His right arm was missing, and the wound was still pretty fresh. And I said, tell me your story. He said, well, I was a construction worker. I've been going to church. I've been a Christian a long time, but I was a construction worker, and then I lost my arm in a cement mixer just 6 months ago. And I'm like, oh, my goodness. He said, yeah, I was so depressed. I didn't know what to do. But then Monkumar came to our church, and he was saying that I can go share the gospel with people. I can even plant a church. And I thought, how can I do these things? I have no arm, what to do. But I went to the training anyway, and he told me how to share my testimony. He encouraged me to be bold. And I thought, you know, I don't have my arm, but I have my legs. I can walk to a nearby village that I know of. And so this guy, up he went. And, you know, he swallowed his pride, and he started with some people that he kind of knew, and we gave him some books. He said, hey, you know, I've been following Jesus, and it's really been a blessing in my life. Would you like a book? And some people actually took a book, and he got a little bit more bold. And the next guy, he said, would you like a book? And he shared a little bit more about his testimony. And the next guy, he said, well, can I pray for you? When he saw a problem, and he prayed for this person. And he went through the whole village, giving away books and offering to pray for people. And nobody was going to yell at him because they saw he was missing an arm and they felt bad for him, I guess. But then all of a sudden he went to one house and there was a 16-year-old girl there. And she said, yes, I want to follow Jesus. He said, well, that's amazing. Let's pray. And they prayed and she said, and she was saved. And so he started going back there every week to study the Bible with her. And, you know, he's a 30-year-old man. She's a 16-year-old girl. They had to do it outside on the porch. And the whole family was going to supervise, of course. So they were watching them study the Bible, and they were listening. And then within a few weeks, the whole family believed. And then those were the first believers in this village. So then other people were saying, what's going on in this house? And they started looking over the fence. And then they started joining the Bible study. And that guy said, you know, it's only been 6 months, but I'm a pastor now. I go there every week, and we have church. So he went from a depressed construction worker to a small-town pastor in 6 months, and I just read about him this past week, actually. That little church there went and planted another church in a nearby village this year. So isn't that amazing? We really see that the gospel spreads when neighbors share with neighbors, when people go to their friends and family, when people go to someone in their community who's in need and say, can I pray for you? And you know, believe it or not, sometimes when we pray for people, God answers those prayers, and then those people suddenly think there's something to this God we're talking about. Me as a foreign missionary, I didn't get to seal the deal with people very often because I was foreign to them. But those locals, when they went to somebody in their own context and had a story of transformation and said a prayer, that's what made people think, I could follow this Jesus too. And that's something that actually all of you in the pews have today that Pastor Mitch actually might not. He's a pastor. That seems foreign to most of our neighbors. Oh, he's a professional Christian. I could never be like him. But you guys, you're farmers, you're teachers, you're doctors and lawyers and everything else. You're normal people with normal neighbors. And when we step out and offer to pray for our neighbors in times of need, or share a testimony about what God has done in our lives at a certain time that they might be able to relate with, it clicks a lot better sometimes than when the pastor goes there. It's amazing the power of community members sharing the gospel with community members, and we're seeing that in Nepal. It can't be the job of the professionals to grow the church necessarily. But it's in our hands. I've shared a lot of exciting stories this morning. But you know, believe it or not, over the years, there were quite a few times that we asked ourselves, is it really worth doing this? Is this worth it? In 2019, you all remember a couple friends of ours on our team, they went out just like we did all the time, going door to door, giving away gospels. Two young foreign guys with families just like mine, they got lost in the Himalayas, got trapped in some remote valley, and actually died. And we looked at ourselves and said, is this worth it? Is this worth risking our lives for? Fast forward to 2021, I thought I was going to die. We went into the deepest, farthest away Buddhist village that we knew of, and I got so sick that I started coughing up blood, and the whole country locked down from Delta COVID, and I couldn't get out of there for 3 weeks. But this Hindu family took me in, and I stayed in their attic pretty much. But they fed me, and they gave me tea. But every night, my fever was spiking, and I was just coughing and coughing. And I thought, Lord, if I'm going to die here, was it really worth it to give a couple of people this little thing? Just a few weeks after we came home this time, that guy that I'd been training to go trekking, it was really awesome. He'd come. He was just planning on staying for a few months. And then he got so excited about what we were doing, he made a commitment to stay for another 2 years and beyond. But just after we left, he went out on another trek, just like we always do, and he went and got arrested. Well, in all my years there, I'd bumped into police a few times, but I told them exactly what to say, and we always get away with it. But they actually arrested him, and they actually shipped him back to Kathmandu, and they actually kept him in jail there, and they weren't letting him go. And then finally, after a long time, they actually deported him, and now he can never go back to Nepal. I thought, Lord, I'd spent some of my last months really training this guy. How is this worth it? But in all those times, what we really had to decide is, the question really came down to, is following Jesus worth it? Is following him where he leads us worth it? Now, for my family, that meant going to the Himalayas. For most of you, it won't mean something quite so dramatic. I think most of us are called to bloom right where we're planted. I know we missionaries, we do a real good job of saying, you know, go into all the world and make disciples, and that's good. As a church, we need to do that. But I'm also really encouraged by Paul's letter to the Philippians, where he says, you know, make it your ambition to lead a quiet life, to mind your own business, and to work with your hands, just like we taught you, so that you won't be dependent on anyone and may always have something to share with those in need. So clearly, God calls some people to be pastors, some people to be missionaries, and a whole lot of people to be salt and light in their own communities in all kinds of vocations. And that's most of us. So, is following Jesus worth it as a pastor or a missionary, or right here as a farmer or a teacher or a doctor or a lawyer or a construction worker? There's risk in all of them. You know, I got sick and almost died. Those other guys actually passed away. My other friend got in trouble with the law and his ministry got tanked. Those same risks will come to you if you try to follow Jesus where you are. Maybe being ashamed, going up to somebody and saying, hey, can I pray for you? You know, some people are going to say, no, what are you, crazy? Or you start sharing your testimony maybe and somebody might ridicule you, or it might cost you something. It might cost you just even your reputation. Are you willing to take those risks? Time and time again in Nepal, we thought, as we saw some of these risks, we thought, yeah, well, let's keep taking the risk. And you know, in the end, as I see the transformation and I see the blessing that came to that country and to all those individual Christians that we've worked with, I had to say, for me personally, yes, it was always worth it. I got rejected many times. You know, many times things didn't work out. We took risks many times. But now I'm hearing all these testimonies from all these people whose lives were transformed, and they're saying that I was a part of it, and that means you were a part of it. And I think, yeah, God, following you was worth it. Taking those risks was worth it. So I don't know what following Jesus will look like for you this week or in the coming years. Maybe some of you will get to be missionaries to some far, far away land. But I know that all of us are called to be listening for his leading, to be salt and light, to share the gospel with our neighbors, to be there for those who are in need around us. And I believe that as we step out, we will see fruit just like those people in Nepal are seeing fruit. just like us, sometimes they're scared to open their mouths or to go to a neighbor or to take a stand for the gospel. They're no different than you and I. They face the same risks of maybe being humiliated or maybe being rejected. But time and time again, they're seeing fruit from stepping out. And maybe it takes 100 failures for that one little bit of fruit, but would you be willing to share the gospel with 100 people and be rejected 99 times if you could lead just one person to faith? Would you be willing to do that? In Nepal, the locals are saying, yeah, we're willing to take that risk. And they're seeing God at work through them as they're stepping out and doing that. And so my final challenge for you today is take the risk. God is at work, and God works through people. It's his amazing way of blessing us and using us. So what can you do this week? Thank you so much again for your many years of prayers and support for our family. Our future as a family and our ministry is a little bit uncertain at the moment. We're back in Canada now for an extended time. Between adopting Chin Mai and a bunch of the surgeries that Nam is going to be needing and us running out of schooling options in Kathmandu, we're planning to be based in Canada for at least the next few years, but continuing to work with OM Nepal, raising money and sharing the stories about the amazing things that God is doing there. Those locals there, like we provide them with books, we provide them with bus tickets, and so I'm going to be traveling around to different churches and sharing what they're doing and raising funds for them to keep doing what they're doing. So as a family, we'd really continue to appreciate your prayers for us as we work to support them and see God's kingdom continue to grow in the Himalayas. We've got a table out in the foyer. I'd love it if you could, you're free to take one of our new cards. We'd love to live on your fridge, even if it's around the side you don't always see. If you could pray for us every now and then and for the people of Nepal, that would be awesome. And if you're not getting newsletters from the Himalayas, from us about what's going on in the Himalayas, feel free to sign up for that. But once a month, we'll be sending out an exciting story, just like the ones I shared today, about what God is doing in the Himalayas. So today, church, I want you to be encouraged. God is at work, and I want you to be challenged, because you can be a part of it. God bless you.